Cleveland State basketball. It's on Thursday, January 15th, 7 o'clock at the Wohlstein Center. It's hosted by Ken Carmen and Anthony Lima. What a joyous occasion it will be for all. You can get tickets at csuvikings.com/tickets. csuvikings.com/tickets. Enter the word Horizon, H-O-R-I-Z-O-N, Horizon. Do that by the end of this hour at 92.3thefan.com, and you can get registered to win. I'm Jeff Phelps. My buddy over there is Daryl Ryder. It'll be a joyous occasion.
Just read the copy, Jeff.
You get Carmen and Lima together.
Just read the copy.
I mean, they're a delight.
As written.
They're a delight. Delight, I say.
Will you be there?
No. I get enough of them every day. I mean, too much sunshine in my life would be just detrimental.
Skin burn.
That's rough. Get ready. Coming up at 12:20, Joe Shad's going to join us. He covers the Dolphins for the Palm Beach Post. With Mike McDaniel in town, we figured, hey, Joe, perfect, let's do it. So Joe's going to join us coming up at 12:20. I've been talking about this morning. Arthur Blank is the owner of the Atlanta Falcons. Arthur, a really rich dude. And he just changed general managers and head coaches. Raheem Morris out as head coach, Terry Fontenot out as his general manager. And he hired outside firms to do an analysis of his organization. And they came back, Daryl, with the thought that you need to hire one person who's kind of the guy, the point man. And your head coach needs to respond to that guy, and your GM needs to respond to that guy, a president of football operations. And all the rumbling sounds like it's going to be Matt Ryan, but who knows? But when Arthur Blank had his press conference...
No, they hired him yesterday.
It's official?
I mean, he said his goodbye on CBS.
Oh, I missed
and
that.
And when they were talking about John Harbaugh on the pregame show, he excused himself from the conversation. The cameras followed him, and he was texting someone on his phone. And they're like, so who are you texting? He goes, no comment. It was actually some pretty funny television.
That's beautiful.
And so, yeah, yesterday was Matt Ryan tribute day on CBS. Yeah.
Well, he's the point man, apparently. So he's going to be the guy in charge. I don't mind that. Arthur Blank met with the media last week, explained what he's thinking there, and explained his role in this stuff, too, as the owner of an NFL franchise.
One of the reasons we felt it was necessary is that I'm not involved in a day-to-day basis in our football business, and shouldn't be. Because I have authority doesn't mean I have the knowledge. So we can never confuse the two. And if you get a leader who's in that position, they get confused, they can really make some bad decisions. So I've never been confused about that. So we wanted somebody else to have input and guidance and hold the accountability and work closely with the head coach and general manager to build their capacities as a coaching staff and building a roster, making sure it's consistently held within the vision that we have for the team, how we want to play ball on the offensive side of the team, on the special team side, on the defensive side of the ball. So that's the biggest role that person will play. If you bring in the right person, it'll make a big difference. Obviously, you still got to hire the great head coach, the great general manager, and the president of football will not be doing their job for them at all, but we'll be holding them accountable and giving input, wisdom, and guidance where necessary.
I think it's really insightful by a guy who made a fortune doing other things. And again, what he said there that really stuck out to me, because I have authority does not mean I have knowledge. And if you look around pro sports, you know, if I owned a team, would I want input? Darn right I would. I own the team. However, he said day-to-day operations is not what he does, and he wouldn't be confused about that, Daryl. And I think that's interesting. Now, let's compare that to what's going on here. You had Paul DePodesta. You have Andrew Berry. You had Kevin Stefanski. By all accounts, they weren't each other's bosses, and they all answered to ownership. One of many different setups you can have. And Jerry Jones owns the team. Jerry's the general manager in Dallas, and Jerry does everything. That's another approach you can have. But I liked what Arthur Blank said. Because I have authority does not mean I have knowledge. And he's smart enough to know that. I appreciate that.
Who does he think he is, Uncle Ben Parker? With great power comes great responsibility. Like,
isn't that an interesting comment, though? How many pro sports owners would actually say that?
Not many.
Yeah, I know.
Part of the problem in pro sports in general is the owners think that they do know everything. And usually the ones that do are the least successful. But they can't have an honest moment to look in the mirror and see that they're the problem with things never working out. Relating it specifically to the Browns setup, when the Haslams first bought the team, they took that approach. They hired Joe Banner to be the CEO, and that turned into a cluster mess. He hired Mike Lombardi to be the GM. You could not hire a worse human being to be a GM than Mike Lombardi, but he did it. And we all knew that that was a catastrophe waiting to happen.
That didn't last long either.
No, it didn't. And to the Haslams' credit, they wasted no time moving on. Then they have on multiple occasions done the report to us structure. They've done the chief strategy officer thing, but everybody still reports to us.
The three-headed management team that reports to the owner,
coach, GM, and business side.
Well, in the Browns' case, coach, GM, and chief strategy officer seemed clunky to me from the start.
Well, I call it the circle of trust, right? You'd have the coach, you'd have the GM, you'd have the business guy, you'd have the marketing guy.
You De Niro here?
No,
the circle of trust.
I know, but that's how I looked at their setup.
I wonder if now by Andrew Berry apparently being the main guy here, if that cleans this up, Daryl.
Probably not.
You don't think it does?
No. I don't. The problem is I don't know what the right setup is for the Browns. I just know that every setup that they have had has not worked. And that's got to be frustrating for them. They've spent ungodly sums of money to try and get it right. Just nothing has worked on a consistent basis for them. And if I'm the Haslams, I'm immensely frustrated by that.
Are you frustrated enough? And I understand why this might be really difficult for them. Are you frustrated enough where you just step away from the day-to-day operation? See, this has now become what they do.
I know.
Arthur Blank is
a family business to them.
Well, it is. Arthur Blank started Home Depot. He's got bigger fish to fry than worrying about the Atlanta Falcons. Though it's a huge concern for him, but he's going to hire a guy, and that guy is going to run football, and he's going to talk to Arthur Blank. Done. It's Matt Ryan talking to Arthur.
I think the most successful owners in pro sports are those that have built from the ground up, not those that inherited or picked up.
You mean built something else from the ground up?
Built from the ground up, okay?
Like Arthur Blank at Home Depot.
Yeah. Mark Cuban,
Dan Gilbert.
Yeah, like where you built it from the ground up. And that's not a criticism of those that picked up the ball and carried it forward.
I'm all for inheriting big amounts of cash.
Well, so am I.
Just hasn't happened.
Exactly. I got to take my scratch offs downstairs and cash them in to get more.
Congrats.
No, I didn't win enough. No, the problem is I didn't win enough. I only won like $5.
Too bad.
And trust me, when I win the lottery, there will be signs. I won't tell you, but there will be signs.
Dano, play that shorter version of that Blank comment one more time. Take a listen again, folks.
Because I have authority doesn't mean I have the knowledge. So we can never confuse the two. And if you get a leader who's in that position, they get confused. They can really make some bad decisions.
That's really telling. And again, that's not about our owner. That's about all kinds of other owners around.
And when you make emotional decisions, you make bad decisions.
Yeah.
Like, so that's why, when we were talking earlier in the show, Jeff, about, I made the joke, there's 12 candidates right now. There's probably going to be more. It's going to turn into the quarterback jersey looking for the head coach. But like I, the reason why I defend this approach, where, and I understand you bring it up. Hey, it sounds it's looking like they don't know specifically what they're looking for. In their case, I kind of feel like that's okay, because what they have gone through, it hasn't produced the results to match their financial investment. Yeah. So I don't have a problem with them looking at as many guys as they have and potentially will look at. And I don't, you know, I can make a case for going about 8 different directions with this coaching search as well.
Arthur Blank, Falcons, because I have authority does not mean I have knowledge. One of the great lines that I've heard in the last several decades. Joe Shad covers the Miami Dolphins for the Palm Beach Post. That means he has sat through a lot of Mike McDaniel football games, a lot of Mike McDaniel press conferences. Mike interviewing with the Browns today. Joe's joining us next. And coming up at 12:40, Menigan just churning out guests as we go. Former Aurora Green man, Seahawks tight end, A.J. Barner, coming up in this hour right here on Baskin and Phelps. Daryl's in for Andy. We wanted insight into Mike McDaniel, more so than the guy who wrote the 32 reasons that Kyle Shanahan should be let out of his deal in Cleveland so he could leave as offensive coordinator.
Great moments in Browns history, by the way.
Well, it was a biggie. So we thought, you know what? Joe Shad, top-notch journalist. He works for the Palm Beach Post. He covers the Miami Dolphins. He's worked with ESPN, the Orlando Sentinel, Newsday. You can follow him on Twitter, X, and Instagram, at Shad Joe. It's S-C-H-A-D-J-O-E. And he joins us on the Make It Right, Call Kyle Wright hotline. Joe, thanks for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Were you surprised Mike McDaniel became available? Because the word in Miami was, okay, he's good, and now he's going to help in the GM search, and then all of a sudden he's out.
Even Ross, the owner, really liked Mike McDaniel, liked his offensive creativity, the fact that he connects with players. You know, he's a sharp mind, wanted to make it work. But there are other people who were in his ear, including the consultant Troy Aikman, his son-in-law, who's a sports business person who's going to be involved in decisions moving forward. And so I think that, you know, I think that Mr. Ross decided that it would be a smart move to search for a new general manager and coach at the same time. Like many NFL teams for years, they've flip-flopped back and forth, new GM, new coach, new GM, new coach. And so now the GM that the Dolphins have hired will be involved in this coach search.
Was it that simple? I mean, what ultimately do you think led to his demise in Miami? As they say, if you're going to hire someone, you have to understand why they're actually available to you. So what was the end? Was it as simple as the results this past season not meeting the expectations?
Yeah, I mean, the Dolphins had a decrease in wins in each of the last two seasons. In the previous season, Tua Tagovailoa had been significantly injured, and this season, Tyreek Hill had been significantly injured. But injuries cannot be an excuse that you lean on in the league. Everybody has injuries, as we know. Look at the 49ers. Look at what Kyle Shanahan, Mike's mentor, has been able to do despite significant salary cap constraints, despite significant injuries, despite the fact that the NFL keeps screwing them on scheduling. I mean, nothing stops this guy. So the thought is, if you're smart enough, you'll find a way to overcome. McDaniel led the Dolphins to 2 playoff appearances, no playoff wins in 4 years. And they didn't beat good teams. They didn't win on the road. They didn't win in the cold. They had 4 second-half adjustments. They had poor adjustments relative to smart defensive coordinators figuring out how to adjust to Mike's offensive scheme, which was very successful early in his tenure. And there were some questions about leadership and discipline. And so when those all kind of come into play, you can understand why the Dolphins made a change.
Some of the things you just described are some of the things that folks said here about Kevin Stefanski. Mm-hmm. If you're the Browns, Stefanski, would you be interviewing? I'm sorry. Go ahead, yeah. Joe.
No, and Stefanski, as you know, will be a Dolphins candidate. So
yeah,
You know, I think he's going to do a better job given a second chance.
So Stefanski or McDaniel or both?
Maybe both. Certainly McDaniel. I was on WFAN in New York after the Jets were interviewing Adam Gase, and I said that I could not endorse the idea of Adam Gase becoming a head coach so quickly once again, that it would be better for him to take a step back as an offensive coordinator, maybe learn some more things from another head coach, and then relaunch his career as a head coach again in the future. Certainly parallels can be drawn to McDaniel and Gase, although I think McDaniel's the better head coach, and I think he is better positioned due to several factors. Humility is one of them. Emotional intelligence is another one. I definitely think McDaniel will be a better head coach second time around.
I got to say, Joe, I'm a little nervous about Mike all of a sudden. You mentioned he struggles against really good teams, struggles against the adjustments, doesn't like cold weather. Mm-hmm. The Browns, well, at least for now, play in cold weather until they build the dome.
Yeah.
And I realize you don't follow everything that happens up here in Cleveland. But like the Browns are not in the greatest shape. You know, offensively, they basically got to rebuild the entire side of that football this offseason. Where does Mike fit in as far as like the building processes? Is, you know, he's a great X's and O's guy, might be great with players and teaching and whatnot, but where does he fit on the building an offense and helping build and coach younger personnel to fit said offense? How do you think he fits in there?
Mike McDaniel doesn't have a history of scouting like former Dolphins coach Brian Flores, for example, once did, but he does have a noted track record of identifying the right skill players in free agency and the draft in previous stops, including Cleveland, as well as with the Dolphins, where, for example, he banged the table for Devon Achane, the third round running back out of Texas A&M, who's become one of the most exciting, dynamic, explosive players in the NFL. He's a smart, creative mind. He can draw up the ball plays. One of the problems is that sometimes the defense was confused and the offense was a little confused too, because maybe it was a little too much, a little too complex, a little too smart. So, you know, Mike had spoken about how he and the defensive coordinator, Anthony Weaver, were kind of dialing things back, you know, simplifying the formations and motions, simplifying the messaging in team meetings. Mike is an outstanding communicator, but sometimes he can take a little longer in press conferences and team meetings than maybe is ideal. And so he's constantly evolving and trying to tighten up his message. And, you know, that was the case for discipline. He had several players that were late in 2024, he cleaned that up. Now, part of it is that they got rid of guys like Jalen Ramsey. So it's always kind of hard to know, right? Chicken, egg, horse. Is it the players who are, you know, ruining the culture and making it toxic, or could a different coach have sort of changed the chemistry better?
President, you know what I mean? Sorry about that, Joe. Go ahead.
It's okay. Yeah. So, you know, I do think that Mike will be better prepared the second time around. I also think that, you know, it's like anything else. You want to be in the right fit, the right situation. And I can't say if Cleveland is. I don't know.
Joe Shatt joining us. He covers the Miami Dolphins for the Palm Beach Post. You can follow him on X at Shad, S-C-H-A-D-J-O-E. Mike McDaniel interviewing with the Browns today. Mike, one of the most, I think, unique head coaches maybe in NFL history. I love listening to him. He's clearly a smart guy. He's clearly a different guy. And I think that's great. How do players feel about that? Any issues there?
No, I mean, McDaniel openly spoke about the need to hold players accountable for things like lateness in a firmer fashion. So that's an adjustment that he made that I think some players would have told you they felt were necessary, you know, especially those grizzled veterans who had been around the league. You know, McDaniel openly spoke about tightening up his messages, shortening meetings, shortening walkthroughs, shortening practices. I think there's a self-awareness there that some coaches don't have. Okay, I've met a lot of coaches in college and pro, head coaches and coordinators, disciplinarians, players, coaches, guys who talk about, you know, toughness and discipline, and guys who try to out-scheme you. You can win in a lot of different ways in this league. And so I don't think the fact that McDaniel, people make fun of, like, the fact that he has, like, cropped pants and changes up his eyeglasses and wears fancy sneakers. Like, I don't think that in anyone's mind should exclude him from being a good football coach in the National Football League. So, no, I don't think McDaniel lost the locker room. No, I don't think players are celebrating his departure, which was the case when the last coach, Brian Flores, left.
Joe, when you look at, Mike from an input standpoint, right, there's been a lot of reporting that the Browns would like to keep Jim Schwartz as the defensive coordinator. Obviously, there are candidates out there. You're not going to tell them who their coordinators would be. How receptive to that do you think Mike would be, considering the success that the Browns have had on that side of the football the last 3 years with Schwartz in charge of that unit?
When the Dolphins hired Mike McDaniel, they asked him to retain defensive coordinator Boyer, and he did so, and it didn't work out, and so he fired him after a year. They brought in Fangio, who was a genius, but their personalities didn't mesh, so Fangio left. He brought in Anthony Weaver, who's had some measure of success. So to answer your question, I think he would definitely be open-minded to keeping on very well-respected assistants who are already in place.
Do you think Mike gets a job, whether it be Cleveland or anywhere else, or does he have to become an offensive coordinator?
Well, he's reportedly interviewing in 4 spots. And so, my gut feeling is that there's like a 1/3 chance he'll land a head coaching job, that it's more likely that he'll return as an offensive coordinator in the league before relaunching his career. But you never know. I mean, these owners, they make the final decision. And, Stephen Ross was really charmed by what McDaniel represented, the fact that no other teams were interviewing him at that point, thought he was unique. And McDaniel was a unique individual. Some owners will come away from their meeting with him saying, my God, there's no way I'd hire this guy. And some will be intrigued. Sort of like those big tech companies out in like the San Francisco area, Sometimes you listen to the people they hire and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they hired him. But, you just never know. You never know. So I think McDaniel will do well in interviews, and I certainly think he has a chance to advance to the final stages of a few of these. But I personally don't think it would be terrible for him to, bridge his way back to a really good job through an offensive coordinator position.
Kevin Stefanski land in Miami?
I think he's certainly a candidate. Owner Stephen Ross has repeatedly hired coaches without head coaching experience. I think that Ross tends to go with young people. Not that Stefanski's old, and of course Harbaugh's in his 60s, so every situation is unique. But maybe he reverses course. Maybe after hiring 6 or 7 coaches with no head coaching experience, maybe he's come around to the idea. I mean, certainly he tried to hire Jim Harbaugh, tried to hire Sean Payton, John Harbaugh certainly fits more into that mold as proven championship winner. I think Stefanski, to me, is a smart guy who was certainly a hot candidate a few years ago, but hasn't certainly proven to be a championship caliber coach to this time.
Joe, thank you very much for joining us today. We appreciate it. You have a search going on down there that's keeping you busy. Same thing here. So we appreciate your perspective on Mike McDaniel. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Stay warm.
Joe Shad joining us on the Make It Right Call Kyle Wright hotline, throwing in a barb about our weather. Thank you, Joe. Yeah, and we always appreciate that from the folks in Florida. The folks in Seattle don't get snow, but there's a guy in Seattle who knows all about it, and he's going to join us next. Former Aurora Green Man football player, former Michigan Wolverine, former Indiana Hoosier, now Seattle Seahawk, A.J. Barner. Coming up next right here on Baskin and Phelps. We're in for Andy Baskin today. You know, here in Cleveland right now, we're not dealing with a playoff team. We're not happy about
that.
No, we're not. We're looking for a head coach. But there's a team way out in the Pacific Northwest that has a Cleveland kid playing on it. They have a head coach who's doing real well. So we thought, well, let's tie it in so that we have something to talk about today. And so here he is. And we're thrilled to have him with us. He's the former Aurora Green Man. He's A.J. Barner, tight end for the Seattle Seahawks. He joins us on the Make It Right, Call Kyle Wright hotline. A.J., thanks for joining us.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me on here.
Congratulations. You guys were 14-3. You're in the playoffs. You're looking good. You're one of the teams to beat. How much fun has it been this year for you guys?
No doubt. It's been a lot of fun. It's been the goal really the whole time, though. You know, I feel like we've had a collective group effort that this is the mission, and here we are, you know, in the divisional round, ready to get going.
How tough was it to sit around and wait all weekend to find out who you get to play, and then you find out you have to play probably one of the more physical teams in the conference, and they won't die no matter how many players they lose. You get San Francisco now in the divisional round.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, they're a real good team. We just faced them 2 weeks ago, but the week off was real nice for us, and it's nice knowing, too, that you're going to play at home. So obviously waiting around was a little bit different, not sure who we were going to play, but being able to get, you know, take a week off and get the body right, even though we were pretty much around the facility the whole week, has been nice, and we used it to our advantage. So I think we'll be ready to go regardless of who we're playing, but yeah, it'll be a great challenge with the Niners.
A.J. Barner joining us, tight end for the Seattle Seahawks. I was out in Seattle 2 months ago.
Yeah.
How do you deal with all those hills, man? That's ridiculous out there.
Yeah, no, it's a little bit different than Cleveland. I would say on surface level, when you're looking, like, just straight ahead, it's kind of similar to home, where I'm from in Cleveland, Ohio. But, like, when you look off in the distance and see the mountains and see the hills and the different elements that it provides, it's a little different, but it's great out here. I'm a really big fan of it, and the people are great, the city's great, the football team's awesome, so I'm really pleased with being out here in Seattle.
City was really laid back, but I must tell you, you're just driving around town, and then all of a sudden there's this hill, and you think, if it's wet, man, my tires aren't going to stick. I thought it was nasty.
No doubt, yeah. Fortunately, we don't get as much snow as we do in Cleveland, but, you know, definitely get some rain, but it's a great place to live.
How's the, you playing on the West Coast, 3 hour difference. How is it like with your family back here, being able to watch you? You flying them out every week? How does that work?
It's a long flight.
Yeah, no doubt. My family gets up here when they can, honestly. They come to, you know, a few home games out of the year. Sometimes it's easier for them to make it to the away games. And same with friends too. Like, they're always tuned in back home, but quite honestly, I mean, I don't really have too many people out here. And, for me as a young player in the league, like, honestly, that can be a bit of an advantage for myself just because, you know, with the schedule that we have and, you know, playing all these games, it might be on a Thursday night, you might play on a Monday and then play on a Sunday. Like, it can be nice to kind of just like be worried about myself and handling my business, and my family comes when they can, and I know they're watching at home when they're not here. So it's great to have them out here, but it's also nice to, you know, be a little bit away from home and handle my business out here and know my people are watching back home.
A.J. Barner joining us, tight end for the Seattle Seahawks, Indiana Hoosier, Michigan Wolverine, which, by the way, I'm sure went over real well with the folks in Indiana when you went to Michigan. That had to be something fun to deal with. But you ended up with two great schools. And now you're sitting there in Seattle, and you came in, Mike McDonald came in the same year. Clearly the Seahawks hired a really good young head coach. What is it about Coach McDonald that stands out to you, AJ, when it comes to the success you guys have had?
Just the culture that he's established. He lets his players do their thing, but, you know, we have a standard that we play to. We have a discipline that we have around here. And, you know, our team really enjoys being around each other, just like any really good team at any level, whether it's, you know, Mighty Mites or high school or college. You know, in the pros, you don't think that that culture is as big of a deal just because everyone's grown men. But at the end of the day, you know, our team loves being around each other, and we handle our business. And like I said, there's a standard that we hold ourselves to, and players, coaches, everyone involved falls under that umbrella.
Yeah, well, speaking of culture shift, I mean, the Indiana football program wasn't exactly a powerhouse until Kurt Cignetti got there. Guessing you're rooting for the Hoosiers, but what's it like being in the NFL and looking back on your time at Indiana and seeing what Cignetti and the Hoosiers have been able to accomplish? Now they're going to play for a national championship against Miami.
Man, it's crazy. When I was at Indiana, it was a different coaching staff there and before the NIL area. And quite honestly, the resources were nowhere near what they are now. And, you know, to be honest, that, you know, wouldn't have happened. But what they've done with the program, the belief that they've gotten there with Coach Cignetti and, you know, what he's done, really just getting people to believe, getting people to buy in. And to be honest with you, like had you told me that this would happen, I would tell you no way, just because where they were at when I was there. But to see it happen and see where they're at today, it's truly unbelievable. And obviously, I'm pulling for them just because of my ties to Indiana for sure. And obviously, you know, going to Michigan too, I root for Michigan, you know, any day of the week as well. But at this point, I tell people I'm a Seahawk. I went to Indiana, I went to Michigan. But I feel like I'm at home out here in Seattle. But regardless, obviously rooting for the Hoosiers this weekend, I think, or whenever they play. But I think they got a good chance to handle business.
A.J. Barner joining us. He's a tight end for the Seattle Seahawks. He's from Aurora, and he's getting ready to play the San Francisco 49ers coming up in the playoffs next week. Dan, who you talked to when right before we went on the air, Dan used to give me grief because I always, always liked Sam Darnold. And Dan always said, I need somebody in my life who loves me as much as you love Sam Darnold. Well, Sam comes in there this year and proves that what he did in Minnesota last year was not a fluke. What has he brought to the Seahawks? What's he brought to the Seahawk offense? You were the second leading receiver for the Seahawks this year. You obviously made a connection with him real fast, AJ.
Yeah. Man, I think... just a professional quarterback and played at a high level and mature, you know, had his ups and downs throughout the league. But, you know, he's really got it going over the past couple of years. And I think it's his attention to detail, the consistency that he brings to the table. And, I think the work that he puts in inside and outside the building, he's just confident in his abilities too. And not afraid to make mistakes. And when he does, you know, it's let's play the next play. And I think that's what anyone can learn as a young player in the league is just, you know, you're never going to play a perfect game. And sometimes you got to move on, turn the page and play the next play. And I think Sam's done a great job doing that all year and he's playing his best football right now. So he's going to continue to carry us to where we need to go.
By the way, I loved you under center this year.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I get up under center. I actually played a little bit of quarterback back home in at Aurora. So it's something I've done before.
We'll look for it against the 49ers. When you guys win the Super Bowl, you're coming back on with us. I'm just telling you right now, okay?
Yeah, let's do it, man.
Thanks, AJ. We appreciate you being with us. Nothing but the best of luck, and we're really happy for your success with the Seahawks.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you guys.
AJ Barner, Seahawks tight end, Aurora Green Man, joining us on the Make It Right Call Kyle Wright hotline. Good for him.
That's fantastic. Second leading receiver for the Seahawks, the number one seed. In the NFC.
Six touchdowns?
Yeah.
Second leading touchdown scorer receiver-wise? And when he lines up under center, you know, it's like for the tush-push type stuff, he looks like he knows what he's doing.
He's about to become our new Travis Kelce.
Absolutely he is.
I didn't want to put that. I thought about mentioning that.
I know.
I did not want to put that
he's
on him.
He's a big dude. He's 6'6".
Yeah, he is.
And he can move.
Really good player. He really is.
It's really interesting. If you were a quarterback around the NFL, what should you think if your team hires Kevin Stefanski? We got a Hall of Fame quarterback is going to tell you what you should think. And Browns fans who didn't like Kevin, you're not going to like this at all. It's coming up next on Baskin and Phelps. Daryl's in for Andy.